Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Premier Chelsea, your source for all things Premier League, but starting with Chelsea first. Coming to you in speakers and headsets, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm one of your hosts, Jackie. I'm here with my good friend, Rahul. But today we have one of the co-founders of Carefree Louisiana, Dylan. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate y'all having me on.
Absolutely. It's an honor to have you. We've had Roy before, and that was a fun, fun episode. He's also part of your team there. Absolutely. We'd like to get a few words from you about who you are and maybe why you support Chelsea.
So my name is Dylan Polk. I'm the co-founder of Carefree Louisiana, which is a coalition of three Chelsea chapters in Louisiana. For anyone not familiar with Louisiana, we're shaped like a boot. and at the top of the state, we have one of our chapters called Port City Blues. In our capital, we have Zydeco Blues. And in New Orleans, where I live, we have the Crescent City Blues.
Wow. Awesome.
We're kind of a growing group that started with an idea a few years back, and now I'd like to think that we're the fastest growing Chelsea supporters group in the country. And I know just from a social media perspective, we have more followers on social media than every Chelsea chapter in America combined. So we're doing our due diligence about trying to stay active and for people to hear about us, because we got a lot of fun things going on in New Orleans. Yeah. And we want everybody in America to be a part of it.
That's very exciting. And honestly, I wouldn't challenge you on the fastest growing chapter, because the pictures you guys post of people showing up for the watch events, it's actually a good size every single weekend. And that's exciting to see.
Yeah, man. And especially considering years ago when I first moved to town, because I was a chef, hoping to have just one or two guys. And now, yeah, even if I'm not able to make it, there's still 15, 20, yeah, 30, 40. And you never know what the group's going to be like.
Yeah, and I think we want to talk a little bit about Blues Days, because that was intense. But I'll pass it over to Rahul for a minute, because I know he's itching to ask some questions about that.
Sure. Yeah, that was, I guess, the major event from at least this past winter over here. And I know you and I, when we were talking before the podcast, you said you kind of came up with the idea. So how did that come together? How did it go? I know it was over the Club World Cup final weekend back in February. And any highlights? And I'm sure there's one coming up next year as well.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I was with Roy one day hanging out at my house, just randomly hanging around. And I had the idea that it'd be really fun to have some type of event that wasn't part of a U.S. tour to get as many chapters together in the country, because I didn't think there was anything like that. And I figured there's no better way to not only grow our brand down here, but to get people to experience what Louisiana and New Orleans could be like, was to have an event. And with Roy Welsh, who you've all had on the podcast before, who's my New Orleans chapter president, and my co-founder, Ben Landry, we kind of worked together. And next thing you know, we hosted an event that had 17 chapters from across the country and 125 people. And the big kicker was we planned it all in 3 months. Even got the support of the club, to back us. That was the craziest part, because at the end of the day, if you don't have the club's backing, it's not as real as you want it to be. The event was fantastic. We got together at a local brewery. A brewery gave us a spot. We had old Chelsea games on the TV. They had gifted us like 200 flags to decorate the place with. The club, that is, gave us lots of flags to decorate the place was. The brewery gave us they wrapped a beer with a specific Blues Day logo on it in the Chelsea colors. The next day we got together in the French Quarter and kind of had a procession from one meeting point all the way through the French Quarter to the actual American Sports Saloon, kind of reminiscing of if you've been to England and watched a match, you go to the pub, a few pints, you pregame, you get rowdy, if you will, and then you go to the match. And that's kind of what we did. We met at the American Sports Saloon and kind of took over for a couple hours and watched the game. Luckily, Chelsea won, and we got to say that we're champions of the world. And then kind of broke apart for a little bit after that, let people experience New Orleans on their own, take a nap, shower, whatever it is that, you needed to do, grab some food. And then we got together that evening for a Mardi Gras parade, which is why we wanted people to come down, because we didn't want it to be just for a Chelsea event. If you're going to get people to travel from all over the country, you have to have some pull. And luckily, the tourism in New Orleans and the history and the excitement and activities that go on here are a big pool. And luckily Mardi Gras was going on at the same time we planned our event. So there was a crew de vue Mardi Gras parade, which I will say is a little bit more on the raunchier side. It's a little bit wilder, a little bit crazier, but not so much your big floats as much as it is just randomness. But it'd be one of those things that you just kind of have to see to understand, because if you're not from here, you just don't get it. But yeah, so it was a great event overall. I think with 125 people coming in a matter of 3 months planning, I can't wait to see what my team can do with, you know, 6-7 months of planning and the club's backing in the beginning. We've already started to have initial conversations with guys at Chelsea and the marketing team to basically start planning once the schedule drops next year, so we can have a rough idea when we want to plan around. Obviously this year, this coming year, with the way the team's going, it's not going to be for a Club World Cup game, but man, we'd love it to have it for like an Arsenal or United game. Even Tottenham would be even better, right? if we can schedule around it. But no matter what, it's always going to be that first weekend of Mardi Gras, because I think there's got to be something to – I want people to get to experience town,
right,
more than just come to watch a game. But, yeah, that was basically the event. It was a great time, and 125 people is what we had this year. My goal next year is 200.
That's awesome. I can safely say that you'll at least have two more from our side here coming down. We tried our best to be there in February. It just didn't work out, but – when Roy was on last time, he made sure that we committed even before the event had happened for next year. So we'll definitely be there. But yeah, absolutely. I remember seeing the pictures on Instagram and on social media, and it looked like a great time. We were having major FOMO. So as soon as you know the dates and the schedule, let us know, because our flights will be booked and we will be there. But Jackie, but let's move on. There, like you mentioned, maybe a Manchester United game. There was a game this earlier today. Didn't go the way we wanted it to, but I guess we didn't lose. So there's some positives there. And overall, we did have a pretty good game. So, Jackie, why don't you run us through the starting 11?
Yeah, happy to. So Mendy in goal, I think obviously everybody knows he's our number one. Back three with Rudiger back in the squad. He was doubt at the first, but he's back in. Thiago Silva, stalwart at the back. Cesar Azpilicueta sliding into that right centre-back position. So maybe Tuchel had a change of heart here. Marcus Alonso at left wing-back. N'Golo Kante and Jorginho holding that midfield. Reece James at right wing-back, like I said earlier. Mason Mount in this newfound V-shape that Tuchel loves a lot. Kai Havertz and Timo Werner up front. So pretty predictable squad from Tuchel, but again, a pretty strong squad overall.
Yeah, and it seems with the injuries and some of the guys that are out, that's his preferred 11 at this point anyway. But Dylan, were you surprised not to see Pulisic? I know there was a lot of talk in the media here after the winner against West Ham that Tuchel doesn't use him as much and he needs to play him a little more. Were you a little bit surprised that he didn't make the starting 11 today?
Yes and no. So I will admit that I had maybe been on another podcast and said that I didn't think at the beginning of the season that Christian Pulisic was a starter for Chelsea. I hadn't fully believed that he had deserved those first, you know, that being in the first 11. But what I will say is he's slowly changing my mind. He comes on, he's direct with the ball. He shows the aggression when he needs to. He makes smart decisions. He's direct and he moves with purpose. And for right now, out of all the players that we have, Timo deserved that start over him today. I think his form lately has been being nothing but refreshing. Timo works harder than anybody else on the field, honestly. I think the work rate that we get out of him is unmistakable. So when you're asking me, am I surprised that he was not on the starting lineup? No. Do I think he deserves it? Yes. Was the game today the day that he should have got that start? I don't think so. I think if he's going to start, it's going to be next week versus Everton, where he has not as much pressure, has a little bit more chance to control the game, because that's what Christian's used to. Right. Controlling the game. He's used to controlling the game and controlling the flow. And I think he's not going to be – we're going to come up against either an Everton team that is fighting for survival and is going to lay everything out, or it's going to be an Everton team that's given up. And I don't know which one we're going to see. And sadly, it's been the latter more than lately. And I hate to see that Frank might possibly get relegated and we might be the team that puts the dagger in. But in all honesty, as far as going back to the Christian conversation, because I'm kind of ranting a second, no, I'm not surprised. I think Christian came in exactly when he needed to today. Sadly, he didn't have the influence that we wanted.
And that's fair. I think a lot of people, at least in the U.S., and that's where we're based, expect him to just start because of what he does for the U.S. men's national team. And that's great because he is one of the better players on that squad. But on Chelsea's squad, like you said, I think Timo Werner has been in good form the last few weeks and deserves to be starting, at least at this point, like you said, maybe against Everton when we do the preview in the next over the episode here. We'll see if we actually pick him to start. But Jackie, Rudiger back from injury. We know he's leaving. He's pretty much out the door. But any surprises there, or just play out for best 11?
Yeah, no surprise at all. I mean, over the last 18 months, Tony Rudiger has probably been one of the best center backs in world football. And there's no way to argue that. And so regardless of if he's leaving us or not, the last few games that are coming up are important to Chelsea, just massively, massively important, not only for Champions League qualification, but to keep him fresh and ready for the FA Cup final. I'm sure he'd love to go out on a bang, similar to Eden Hazard, and get that trophy, another one to just add to his list of accolades. Like we talked about him last week, and he's won a lot of stuff for Chelsea, and I'm sure he just wants to add more because there's individual honors that go with being that quality player. And I must add, he's professional. Regardless of what's happening, he always puts his best foot forward. He's never shy from a tackle. We've seen that. And that's interesting because he's going to another club and you would think he doesn't want to get injured, because as far as we know, no contracts are signed officially. And so you definitely don't want to get injured when you're shopping for a contract necessarily. So absolutely would start him all day long until the end of the season. And then summertime, it's time to reset and recharge and figure out what we're going to do about that position. But I'd start him.
Yeah, and I think Tuchel kind of said in the lead-up, he's not sure what kind of Rudiger he would get, but we saw from the game, we got the Rudiger that we always get, which is 100% passion and aggression. And you said there was no surprise that he came in. There was no surprise that he was ripping shots from United's box, which is what he kind of tends to do. But let's get into that first half. So this 11 that we've just read through, the only change from the Champions League final was Alonso in for Chilwell, who's out. So it was a pretty strong 11 that came in, and we dominated that first half. Obviously, we didn't get the goal, and we go in 0-0. But Dylan, Kai Havertz had a couple of chances. I think we decided to pick De Gea more than the back of the net, because any one of those chances on either side of him goes in, right?
I mean, yes. And at the same time, we were putting so much heat on those balls and he couldn't wrap any of those shots up either. So we were testing the keeper like right. We wanted to. And Timo was being very direct with his shots. Not only, I mean, yeah, he had one that was, you know, down low and away and could have been a perfect shot and should have been a goal against any other keeper. But regardless of whether we want to give David De Gea credit, he's still a top 10 goalkeeper in the world. He may have been faltering in these last couple of years, and we've seen defenses and goalkeepers ruin their careers with bad defenses in front of them. I mean, Kepa, if you would have asked us 3 years ago what we thought of Kepa, he was on top of the world doing everything, and his defense left him hanging. And then what happens when a keeper loses confidence? They go down and down and down, and that's what happened with Kepa. He even stole De Gea's job at one point. So, like, to add to the argument, I mean, we should have finished a goal. There's no question in my mind that we should have finished one sooner. But what I did like to see is that it was quick passing. It was purpose on the ball. It was movement. We weren't stagnant. We weren't doing that same run it down the right wing and throw a ball in and hopefully somebody gets a head on it the whole game. Yeah, we did that a little bit, but that wasn't like our number one tactic during the game. My biggest problem is, how are you going to put up 21 shots and not get any more in the back of the net? We had 65% possession against these guys today. I've never seen us dominate United like that. At least not that I can remember.
Yeah. And I think that's the story of our season, right? We do everything but score the goal. And in this case, luckily, we do end up getting the first one, and we'll touch on that in a second. But we could have maybe gotten one or two in that first half, and that changes the whole complexion of the game, because you come out in the second and you're a little more comfortable. You're not forcing things and trying to get the first goal. Jackie, Dylan touched on it. We had 65% of the ball. You and I have been talking on this podcast for all season. Are you surprised by the fact that we went in 0-0 at halftime?
not at all. And honestly, I think you and I predicted a draw at the end of the day as well, because ultimately, I think what happens is we don't take our chances, or we're not clinical enough with our chances. And that's something that we've ranted about for the last 6-8 months, maybe, saying Lukaku was brought in to finish those chances. I'm not calling Lukaku out, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying our strikers overall, we've relied on them in pockets. Lukaku did well in pockets. Kai Havertz did well in pockets. Mason Mount does well in pockets. Timo Werner had a good run of form for 3 or 4 games. But it feels like when one striker's off, it's not another one. It's you may see Christian Pulisic step up next week, or Hakim Ziyech. And so we've been relying on individuals to show that brilliance, but there's not been a consistent form where we're putting the ball in the back of the net, given how much percentage, how many shots, how much possession we've had through all of these games. And so, frankly, not surprised. Frustrated, maybe, yes, but that seems to be the word you chose, the story of our season. It's going to be like that and regroup in the preseason and figure out what that final piece we're missing is. And it may not be a player. It may be a formation. It may be a tactic. It may be something simple as that.
Yeah, or it may just be working Lukaku in preseason with the squad and unlocking his potential, because we know there's a player there. We know there's a goal scorer there. It's just not working right now. Dylan, I'll come back to you. Reece James back at right wing back. I know you mentioned we were not fully going down the right, but having him on that right side, especially in that wing back position, adds a whole different element, not just to our defense, but also to our attack, right?
Absolutely. And so I have this little group message that goes around with my buddies that we call ourselves Carefree Diehard. And it's just some guys that are on Instagram that keep up with stuff. And the main thing that I was shown by one of my buddies, Ray, was that Reece James had 107 touches and led the field. He had 10 crosses and was ranked first in the game in crosses. Touches in the opponent's box, he had 10, and he had 4 tackles. So if anything, we let Reece James down today. Like, he is playing like an absolute monster. When you look online, you'll see other teams like saying they're like predicted teams that they wish they could have. Every team you line up that you see with Real Madrid or Bayern Munich on it, you got a Reece James sitting there on the right of somebody they wish they had. He's the envy of everybody that's out there. Give him time. If we still had Ben Chilwell on the left side to work with him, I'm not going to say anything drastic, like we would win the league, but we would definitely be more in the conversation if he was allowed to flow. Because right now he's not allowed to flow like he wanted to. He's having to be, I mean, he's playing like he's in a back four sometimes lately with the team that we are, because he's having to defend so much more instead of being able to go up forward. But what I do know is he's the strongest right back in England. He can push anybody around. His first touch might be the best on the team right now. Like, not only can you send him a ball and him do something with it and get around the first man, but he's also going to be able to drop that ball into space to give somebody to get a chance to put a head on a ball. I'm pretty sure he set up both Timo and Kai Havertz for goals that they didn't finish. And how many shots did he have on goal himself that one against the post? Oh, my yeah. God. Oh, my God.
And that was on his weaker foot.
Right? So, so that's on his weak foot, just like you said, Rahul. Wow. Yeah. Like, we're almost there. I think the team needs a little bit more time to gel together. I think because of all the confusion that's going on with our ownership, players, contracts, you're hearing that are leaving. I think there's a little disconnect in the team right now. And I feel like as soon as Monday, when our new ownership was announced and the team can resume play and get back to life as normal and not worry if their paycheck is going to be coming in next week, then maybe we can get back to a fluid team. But as far as Reece James, man, we're lucky to have him. I'm wondering if Aspie leaves and the talk of Jorginho leaving, is Reece going to, Reece better be in the conversation for our next captain. I'm not saying he's the guy that I think should get the armband immediately, because there's always going to be those Mason Mount conversations. You might even have the conversations with, who's the most senior player on the team. But right now, Reece needs to be in the conversation.
I 100% agree with you. And that was actually going to be my question for Jackie about the captaincy, because no matter what's happened this season, we've missed chances, we've lost games, we've drawn games. I think one thing that's consistent is every time Reece James has played and when he's fit, we've just said, what a great player. He does everything right. Doesn't matter if it's the right wing back, right center back. Reece James is the guy. So Jackie, do you think, and I'm going to echo what Dylan asked, is he in the conversation for being a captain? Maybe not next season if Aspie stays, but eventually in the next couple of seasons?
Yeah, I mean, he has to be, right? Because you got to look at a few things for a captain is lead by example. And I think Reece James lead by example on the pitch every time he steps out there. He gives us all
he gives on the pitch. He's never in the media.
Yep, and that's important. It's something where he goes through and does the right things every single time. And we know he also does stuff with charity, does stuff with the local team, which is what you expect from a captain. And, you know, there's some important players that have played for Chelsea at right back specifically. I was thinking of the names like Paulo Ferreira, who has held the captain's armband in specific games, Branislav Ivanovic, Aspilicueta himself. And so it's a position where in the history we've had a few captains, or at least have held the captain's armband. Do I think that if Jorginho and Aspilicueta leave next season, he's probably the first guy in the line? Probably not. I think you're going to see Tuchel maybe leaning on a Thiago Silva, because he's got that experience similar to what you guys are talking about off the pitch as well. And maybe them playing so close to each other, he's going to be in Reece's ear saying, here's a few things you do as a captain vocally on the pitch that can take you from, and it's really hard to say this, but because he's already world-class, but from world-class to that world-class elite, which I dare say he's very, very close already. So,
and that's fair. I think with Thiago's age, even if he gets a captaincy, it may not be for the next 5-6 years. Right. It might be a short-term thing anyway. But yeah, I would agree with, and I think Reece James, even when Alonso scores a goal, and I'll touch on Alonso in a second, Reece James is to the crowd pointing to his badge and more about getting the crowd into the moment of the goal. But let's come to the goal. We've spoken about the right wing back. We've spoken about some of the attacking players. But Alonso, with every striker that we have on the pitch, maybe on the bench, Alonso pops up with the beauty of a goal with the volley on his left foot. Jackie, you said we should just play him as striker when you and I were chatting about the game.
I firmly believe that, by the way. I wasn't saying that as there was a half bit of a joke in there, but honestly, he's got a left peg on him. He can finish from a distance. He's clinical up close. His timing is really, really important. And that's something that's interesting as a left wing back. I think you said he's top goal scoring defender.
Right. Since 2016.
So I use the word defender lightly because realistically, if we were in a pinch, with his height, with the way he finishes, with his timing into the post, I'm sure he could play a striker. And I'm sure in his earlier days, he probably played striker and someone said, look, we don't have a left back, go play there. And he took to the position well. So that's how he ended up there.
Whoever the coach was, though, that put him on defense, needs to be taken out back. Like, seriously, what was that guy thinking?
We lost a world-class striker and moving Marcus Alonso. No, but honestly, I think it's true.
He's got a head on him, too.
Yeah,
like, yeah, absolutely. He does.
We're talking about his feet, but, like, he's great on the header.
Yeah, absolutely.
He definitely is. And we spoke about Chilwell, right? We're obviously missing everything that Chilwell brings to this squad. But Alonso, I think, was in and out. We were playing Saul there. We played Malang Sarr there. But over the last month or so, Alonso has reclaimed that position and said, you know what? I'm here to stay.
Is he a gap stop or has he filled the position? Because I just don't know, man. If we hadn't have had to loan out the players that we had to loan out because they weren't getting minutes like Emerson, would he really be like, because I don't think even in a rotation squad that Uncle Tommy, that's what we call him down here, Uncle Tommy, if he wasn't rotating like he was, would Alonso, I think he'd be trying to get loaned out in January, because regardless of how much credit we want to give him on the day, let's remember that United were still missing Sancho. They were missing Pogba. They were missing Shaw. They were missing Cavani. Like, we dominated a 65% possession in this game, had 21 shots on target, 9 corners, all because of work that he's doing. But at the same time, we were playing against a weakened squad that we should have demolished. And no matter how much we appreciate Alonso moving forward, the one problem that we all need to like refocus on, he is a defender. And I can't tell you how many times that the opponent, while Alonso was in that left back role, not necessarily always today, but in games that he's been in, has left us hanging because he's not tracking back. So while I appreciate his goal today, where did that goal today come from? What side was that on? Am I mistaken in thinking that when I'm thinking about it for all of a second, wasn't it on that left side?
Mm-hmm.
So it was. Alonso on a quick them doing on a on a quick situation, could Alonso been in a better position to help the team defend because he had been maybe further up the field a second ago and might have been winded? I don't know, but I'm not gonna give him all the accolades in the world. I mean, yeah, he got the goal today and he got us the point, and it's one more rung up the ladder to keeping us, you know, secured for third place. But I'm not gonna hug him in and bring him in and say you're the guy, because we all know that we heard news last week that Ben Chilwell was starting to get back in, you know, training just a bit, and we all perked up a bit here in that idea. That
we did.
Just maybe we're gonna start the season off with Chili B back there and wreck shop, because we were top of the table at the very beginning of the season when everything was clicking before the Romelu drop.
Yeah, and Romelu Dylan, drama. You know, I think we all echo what you're saying, because going forward, I don't think you can fault him, but defensively, we've had questions over that before. I think what the point Rahul's trying to make, and maybe Rahul, you'll tell me if I'm wrong, but with the current players that can fill in left back, I think he has to be the guy we select at this moment in time. But if you're looking at all round players, and if we didn't have loans, you have to believe Ben Chilwell is on the sheet. No question, no competition. And to your point, Emerson is a more all-rounded left back or left wing back than Alonso. And so absolutely agree with you there. But
Alonso's contract's up in 1 year.
Yep.
Right. So we got to figure that out.
It's definitely going to be an interesting summer.
No, and
we're going to need five defenders at this point.
We're certainly not saying we need to be playing Alonso if Chilwell's fit. I think, like Jackie said, in the absence
of... That's understood. That's understood. Yeah,
in the absence of Chilwell, I think Alonso, who has had his issues with even with Chilwell being out, not making the squad, now that he's getting back in form, I think a goal-scoring Alonso is definitely more helpful than one.
Although, just one tip back on this conversation as well. I'm going to pose the question to you guys. So let's remove an injury from the equation. Hudson Adoy got played at that left wing back role for just a bit before his injury. And man, he looked sharp. He looked sharp. He was running all up and down that wing. Yeah, he had a little bit of defensive frailties, but no more than Alonso's given us in the past. But I think he offered more going attacking. He may not have had that shot, but he would dribble and attack players more than Alonso. Well, Alonso's not going to take on a player. Alonso's going to shoot when he's got free space and he has the option, but Alonso's not going to dribble past Tellez today. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
And that's fair. I certainly disagree slightly, because
please do though.
Yeah. And I look at what Tuchel decided. Emerson goes out on loan, right? He knew he had Chilwell, Alonso and Emerson. And he said, Emerson, I think, and maybe this is not how it went down, but ultimately he had to pick two out of the three and he picked those two. And I think it comes down to Alonso's ability to contribute to goals, because ultimately that's what wins you games or gets you back into games. Yes. Defensively, he may not be the best, but I think that's why he plays Rudiger behind him, and we play the system that we place. So it's a fair discussion and a good argument and a good back and forth that we're having here on Alonso. Absolutely, I agree with you. I think Hudson-Odoi can do the job there, but again, I don't think he brings in the goals that Alonso does, and I think that's where sometimes we lack with, especially like you said, we took 21 shots and it literally took Alonso's one goal to get us into the game.
Yeah, but once in it goes back to us relying too heavily on our defenders and our midfielders
Absolutely.
To get our goals in. And while I'd love to say yes, I appreciate and want more Alonso goals, which anybody would take, if I have to rely on a defender's goal week in, week out, we've got problems. We have $133 million that didn't come into the game until the 70th minute to the day, and decided to get in the media to talk a little garbage and trash, and not anybody in this group has a 100% trust in that player. So I don't know. While I appreciate Alonso and thank him so much, and I cheered his name and sang a song for him today, we got to figure out what's going on the top of the field way more than we do what's going on at the back.
Absolutely. And I think that's been the story of not only this season, but last season too, especially under Tuchel, is where are the goals coming from? And I know Kai Havertz scores in the Champions League final and we celebrate that. And he did do a job for the last few weeks, but we are lacking that number nine, or in the case of the other team that Ronaldo scores, number seven, that someone that can just score goals. And let's talk about Ronaldo's goal here. I think for the majority of the game, he does nothing. He gets one chance and buries it. And 2 minutes after we've scored, which is criminal, in my opinion, they get back into the game. Jackie, I'll come to you, and then we'll go to Dylan. This has happened quite a bit now. It happened against Brentford, where we scored and they came back right away. It happened against Madrid, where we get one back and then they get a third one. It happened against Arsenal, where they score one, we get one back, and then they go score a second and then a third. What is going on? Is this just a lack of concentration? We're just tired. We're just making mistakes. And in this case, Conte just shoots it forward. It comes right back. We don't have time to reset. What's going on?
Look, certainly we're tired. I think we've played a lot of football this season. I think if you look at all the top teams in Europe, I don't have the exact stat in front of me, but I think we might be leading the line in the number of games played. We also have shot ourselves a little bit with injuries. We've loaned out some critical players that could have come in and done a job. But I want to go back to what Dylan said. As much as we say the ownership situation is not in the player's mind or whatnot, there has to be something that keeps us from losing our focus every now and then. And it's little things where, as a footballer, you're playing, and I don't know this because I'm not a professional footballer, but you've got to imagine you're playing at the highest intensity. Even though we're watching on a screen, it may not always seem like that. You're playing under the highest amount of pressure. You're always vying for those Champions League spots, and points are important, and all of this pressure is piled on. But then you keep thinking, like Dylan said, do I have a contract next season? Do I have a paycheck coming in next week? If the new owner comes in, does he get rid of Tuchel, bring a new manager in, and then my position's gone? And it's difficult to just take that out of your mind. But those are the things that are difficult to kind of see as a player. Multiple factors are affecting you, and it's hard at this point. And I almost believe we need to see out the season as strong as we can, get through this ownership situation, and rebuild in the preseason. And rebuild, again, I reiterate, doesn't mean buying 10, 15 players. It's getting that formation you want down. You're starting 11. We struggle with that as well. So that's going to be important.
I hear you, right? And I get the human element of what's going to happen, uncertainty over the future. But 2 minutes after we've scored, we let them basically just come back into the game. When we scored, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, United looked dejected. They looked like they were holding on to the draw, and we scored, and they said, you know what, here we go again. We've lost the last two games. We're about to lose this one. And we just threw them a lifeline. Dylan, do you agree with the fact that it's down to the uncertainty, or we're just ultimately just tired from 60-plus games that we played this season?
So, absolutely, they're tired. We've played 10 more games than the average team. We are going to make it to two cup finals. We have been to the semifinals in the Champions League. We've come off an extended period with, you know, Club World Cup. The problem with our team being so good is they all have international play at some point. So, yes, I will agree that fatigue is there. But at the same time, this is what they do for a job. Like, this is how they're getting paid. So you're telling me that, like, in a world where they're on the best diet, these guys are absolute unit specimens of health and physicality that, I mean, I don't know. I'm pretty sure there's billions of people around the world that wish they could have the ability to do what these guys are doing. At a certain point, the fatigue conversation can't even be in there. I mean, it will be there, and it's always going to be there because we play three games a week. But if I'm understanding things correctly, these guys go to physios all the time. They're getting days off after matches. If they say that they can play, then they better be able to come and play. If they're hurt and they're injured and they don't need to play, we're a team that sees players pulled off all the time for anything. We don't even have a reason. Rudy was pulled off. We didn't even know he got injured. You know, like there's all sorts of stuff that happens. But yeah, go back to your point. There is too much little stuff. And the little stuff, I think, is I'm not sure we're getting the conversation on the field as far as leadership and guidance, because there's no more humiliating a way to lose a game or to draw a game than to score and immediately lose focus and then come back and do what they did. I'm I felt dejected after that goal, just completely dejected. Like, why is this happening? And even the guys in the pub were singing a song for a second. They were just going, "You're nothing special. It happens every week." You know, just like, because it does. This, I would love to say that we're going to win every game with a clean sheet, but can we go ahead and just bring into the conversation that Mindy hasn't been as strong as we've been used to? The Mindy that we had, you know, this time last year, or I mean, like, excuse me, let's just rewind 3 months.
Yeah, a month.
I bet we would have all said that Mindy was the best keeper in the world. I don't think that we can say that right now. On current form, he's not. And maybe that goes because his defense isn't together. Maybe that goes because there's conversations that the leader in front of him, Rudiger, is leaving to go to a different team because he wants more money and there's problems in the dressing room. Maybe the ownership thing. I mean, I think it's a little bit of everything. Nobody, I think in life, we're all the happiest when we feel secure in our job.
Right.
You know, our significant other and our friends are building us up. And I think just this team has just got so much uncertainty going on that they're going through the paces and getting their job done, but nobody feels 100% confident in what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah. And I just want to add something to Dylan's piece for Holly. You know, I agree that this is, you know, their job and they have to perform and they're paid millions over the years to do it. But some of ex-professional footballers have come out and said, other than the physical aspect of it, there's a mental aspect that it takes on you because you're playing, like you said, Dylan, three times a week, you're traveling, you're not seeing your family all the time. And so at some point you get, I don't know, what are we, 70 odd games into the season? You're just like, are we at the finish line just yet? And it's interesting because you hit the point on there too, Dylan, international, right? Some of them don't even get long summer vacations. They're gone out for international break and they come back and they go, I get a week off and, oh, I got to go back to training. And so that mental burn and churn of like, I never get to take a true vacation. And you've got to imagine when they take vacation, Rahul, Mason Mount takes vacation, walking around, everybody's got phones and cameras because he's a legend. You want to take a picture with him, but you never see them actually maybe switch off. And it's sad to say this, but they're switching off in the game 2 minutes after they score a goal. And that's how it goes. But just wanted to add that in there.
And I hear both of you guys and I agree with it, right? I see that, yes, they've played a lot. They went to the Euros last summer. They came back, got right into this season. But I look at the other side and I look at the two teams above us. Yes, they're the benchmark and the standard for where we want to be, but they've played as many games as we have. Maybe they didn't go away to the Club World Cup, but and Dylan might disagree here, but I just look at them, right? And I see what they did this past week in the Champions League. And I know we're going to talk about Champions League in a second. Is it just the fact that we don't have a major prize to play for? No disrespect to the FA Cup. I know we're going to go there and give it our all. But the fact that there's no title or a Premier or a Champions League trophy to play for, the guys are just like, you know what? Mentally exhausted. We're physically exhausted. We'll make it to the FA Cup final and give it our all. But right now, we're pretty comfortable in third. Let's just get to the end of the season. Dylan, I see you want to disagree.
Well, I mean, I think it's the main reason that those two squads are where they are and in the position they are is two main things: rotation and depth. And I think both of their squads are being rotated more and have more depth than we do to allow them to have the longevity and to keep going what we're doing. We were one goal away from being in the Champions League semifinals. One goal away. But had we had the depth on our bench to allow a Reece James to have a break where he wouldn't have caught an injury, same thing for Chilwell, where we could give Conte a break where he wouldn't have suffered, because Conte has had a blip this year and he had an injury. Jorginho seems to always, if Jorginho wasn't there, what were we going to do? Because Kovacic has been injured. Conte has been injured. Mason has just had to pull through, and you know he's got to be exhausted as well. I think the reason that we're not quite on those level as those two teams just yet is when you look at those benches and you look at what each one of those teams is doing. Liverpool brought in Lucas Diaz, killing it. Jack Grealish making his mark slowly over at Man City. Like they're finding the pieces they need to do, and you're constantly in the media hearing what they're going to be doing next. What's happening next? This is the first year, and I can remember when what transfer speculation are we hearing besides players going out? All we're hearing is about the outward bounds. But what's besides Declan Rice that's going to cost us $130 million, or the Tchouaméni from France who is already being linked with Madrid? What talk have you heard of us bringing anybody? Because I'll go ahead and tell you right now, Erling Haaland is not coming to Chelsea.
No, he's not. And I get what you're saying, right? And I think it also comes down to, not disagreeing with you, I think you're right, the depth is definitely an issue. But I think it also comes down to the players that we do have on the bench aren't stepping up, right? You bring on a Lukaku, you bring on Ziyech in the other game, you bring on Pulisic. Yes, he scored the winner, and that's all great. But consistently not stepping up, I think, hurts, because now Tuchel's looking at, I got 11 and maybe 13 players that I can consistently count on, and then everyone else may throw a flash of brilliance here and there, but apart from that, I don't really have much. And I think you're right. This summer, once the ownership situation is sorted, hopefully next week or in the next couple of weeks, there needs to be a plan in place as to what he needs, and then we go back him and give it to him, because he's only had one player come in really, and it might not be the player that he wanted, which was Lukaku. So a huge summer ahead of us, Jackie. Before we get into the summer, there's a top four battle here. Yes, we're 6 points clear. Do you think we make it now? We've got 5 games left.
I think we'll make it. I think Tuchel will find a way to keep his boys motivated. And I don't want to stray too much off subject, but I do want to share that something that's interesting with Manchester City and Liverpool is they've given their managers five odd years to not only build their philosophy, but you have full trust and belief in the manager that what he says that day is the ultimate. And if you look at Chelsea's history, we have a history of letting managers go when things aren't going right. And so players sometimes can say, you know what, we're not doing so well right now, but manager may be gone. Someone else comes in with a fresh idea, and they get that quick bump of motivation. So it's a critical point for Chelsea, especially with the ownership change happening. What I've seen from Tuchel, I've been very pleased over 18 months, not just because we won a Champions League. I do strongly believe he has the man management talent that I've not seen from a lot of coaches out there in Europe to really take us on for several years. And if you back him for those years, you may be talking about this conversation, guys, in 5-6 years of, we play Tuchel football. We play the way that his vision is. The players that he's purchased respond to the way he wants things done. And we may not be talking about lack of focus or blip or anything like that. It's just going to be, Tuchel's got the 22 guys that he wants, 23, whatever. And he can call upon who he wants, when he wants, and there wouldn't be too much discussion around it.
And that's fair. But Dylan, top four secured, or still a little more work to do here? 6 points ahead of Arsenal in fourth and 8 of Tottenham in fifth.
I'd like to think, looking at the matches that we have left, no, we're not playing any team higher than eighth place. Right. Now, what I will say is, if we don't beat Everton, boy, we don't, I don't know if we necessarily even deserve to even be in the top four. I mean, we've earned it, but at the same time, we're not working as hard as we need to, because our game against Everton, I think, should be a win. Our game against Wolves, we're going to, the one thing that no one's talking about with Wolves is they've all, I think, if I want to look at the stat real quick, just to make sure I'm correct. Yeah. Wolves have only let up one more goal than Chelsea have. So if we're going to talk about what teams are going to give us a struggle, it's going to be Wolves. It's going to be Leicester. And Wolves don't let up that many goals. They don't score that many goals either. But at the same time, like, for a team that's struggling to get goals in the back of the net, to go up against a team that's has a, just as defensively sound a record as we do, we need to if we can get through Everton and Wolves – with 3 points, I'll be feeling like we've got this. But if we walk out of Wolves with 0 points on the board, I'm not going to say that I'm certain, because anything can happen in this league. Arsenal are on a mission. We don't have to like them. We can hate them. We can talk all the garbage we want about them. But if we're not going to respect what Arteta is turning the youngest team in the Premier League into doing, then we're not calling ourselves true football fans and respecting what they're doing. Leicester is going to be another hard game after that. And then what is it? Leeds and Watford. So we're playing three teams in the bottom 16. Obviously we should be winning that, but let's not discredit what Wolves and Leicester can do on us on any given day.
Yeah. And I think you're right. We should make it. We have a better goal difference. Like you said, Arsenal are doing a job, but we have a better goal difference than them. And Arsenal and Tottenham have to face each other. So ultimately, hopefully, one of them or both of them will drop points there. And it hurts me to even say that this point of the season, we're looking behind us and saying what's going to happen. But as long as we handle our business, like you said, against the teams that we've got coming, we should make it. But guys, let's move on. Champions League, we touched on real quick. Let's talk about the games from this week. Man City beat Real Madrid 4-3. Dylan, do you see Man City making the final, or Real Madrid going to put up a bit better fight in the next leg?
Real Madrid's going to win like 2-0.
All right.
I'm telling you, like, Real Madrid has this fight in them. Like, I will never say that I'm rooting for them, but I always, if my team's not going to make it, the team that beat me better. So
of course,
that's kind of how I feel. And I just, anytime during that Man City and Real Madrid game that we felt like Madrid was giving up, boom, there's Benzema.
They came back.
Like, I don't know if we can make a Marvel reference here and call Benzema like Thanos. He is inevitable. Like, he just always has a way of finding the back of the net. I think it's they're going to have to pull something dirty and maybe hurt De Bruyne or Foden. But like right now, I think City's going to pull it off. And a lot of people are going to call me crazy for saying that, because everybody thinks it's automatically going to be City and Liverpool, and it's going to be the battle of, you know, English giants. But man, Madrid just looked good this year. They look the real deal. And I just don't want to hand it to everybody in England every year. I just don't want to do it. And I'm never going to co-sign on saying that Man City deserve this or deserves that. I want Man City sitting with that goose egg on the Champions League board as long as possible. And the only, like, I think Liverpool is actually better than Man City right now. So if Man City do make it past Madrid, I'm gonna hand it to Liverpool, and they're gonna go on being best English team.
we don't have to say that.
I mean, but I don't want to say it either. It hurt coming out of my mouth, but it's the honest truth. So, like, I don't know. Do I 100% believe in what I said, saying that Madrid's going to be City? No. Is it what I think should happen? Yeah.
I think we both feel, Jackie and I both feel the same way too. And like you said, I think Madrid for the longest time looks like they're just going to get blown away, and they come back and only lose by one. And take this back.
Carlo Ancelotti does the eyebrow. Oh, yeah.
People's eyebrow.
Yeah, exactly.
Jackie, let's talk about. No, sorry, go ahead, Dylan.
No, I was going to say, like, everybody knows what Carlo Ancelotti can do. He did it with us. Then he won the double with us. So let's give him the credit. But yeah, go ahead, move on.
No, I was just going to move on to the next game, which was Liverpool against Villarreal. Jackie, Liverpool's quest for four trophies continues. A lot of talk about if they win it, they're the best English team. I'm just kidding. Is there a way back here for Villarreal? I mean, Liverpool are just at this point a machine that just show up and do the business.
It's definitely difficult, but I'll tell you something. If anybody's got the European pedigree, it's been Villarreal in this season so far. They've knocked out some giants. They've played some very good football. They're a hard team to beat, but Liverpool were a different level in that first leg. And so if Villarreal need to do this, I find it very hard. I mean, anything's possible in the Champions League. We've seen some amazing Champions League nights and amazing Champions League comebacks, but it's a very, very slim margin. They're going to have to get everything right. And I think I said this a few weeks ago, but Liverpool getting that Luis Diaz boy, they got a steal getting him, because I saw him on the weekend do a little touch and run. And he's not even looking at what he's doing. He's just, it's a natural talent. And in Liverpool's side, with the way they play, it's just accelerated his growth and his confidence. So can Villarreal do it? Yes. But ultimately, it's like a 1% chance that they'd be able to go past Liverpool.
And that hurts me, because I don't want to see Liverpool in the final, because we've heard enough about six, let alone what happens if they win the seventh.
Liverpool are going to the final.
Well, hopefully Thanos, I mean, sorry, Benzema steps up and stops them, because that would be, I think, ideally for every Chelsea fan, Real Madrid win the Champions League, and I think City win the Premier League, because nobody wants to hear Liverpool fans and everything that comes with that.
Yeah, man, they're the worst.
But let's move on to the Chelsea women's team. I'll run through their game earlier today. It was kind of unfortunate that both the men's and women's team played at the same time. But the women's team are in a title battle with Arsenal. And this was a game that they had against Spurs after just facing them this past weekend away from home, this time at the King's Meadow. They come back and get the job done 2-1. Goals from Beth England and Sam Kerr, I believe. And a tight game at the end, but honestly, they were very comfortable. They had 24 shots, 9 on target, similar to the men, and could have on different days scored maybe 3 or 4. Ultimately, they do win it, like I said, and make it a 4-point lead at the top of the table with just 2 games to go. Arsenal do have a game in hand. So maybe this time next week, if Arsenal drop points, we could be champions. But no matter what happens against for Arsenal, our games against Birmingham City and Manchester United over the next couple of weeks are crucial, because if we win those, we win the title, a third title in succession. And what more could we ask for from a team that just continues to perform and do the business on the pitch? And then they still have an FA Cup final. So wishing them and Emma Hayes all the best, and we'll be watching and supporting. But let's
best move on. Best coach of the game.
No doubt. No doubt. Jackie, let's move on to Everton this weekend. And Dylan touched on it. It's a game that we should be winning. But before we get into the game, I have a small quiz that, like we do with most of our Chelsea guests, between Jackie and Dylan here. And I'll ask a few questions, mainly about Frank Lampard. He is the manager at Everton. He's a legend at Chelsea. So let's talk about his career and his time in management a little bit. So Dylan, I'll start with you. In 2018, Lampard came to the Bridge with Derby County, his first team as manager for a Carabao Cup tie. Who was the Chelsea manager then? Was it Antonio Conte, Maurizio Sarri, or Jose Mourinho?
Sarri.
That is correct. Sarri was in his first season and took on Frank Lampard, who got a resounding reception from the Stamford Bridge faithful. All right, Jackie, same game. What was the final score and who won? Was it 3-2 to Chelsea? Was it 2-1 to Derby County? Or did Chelsea win on penalties 5-4?
I honestly don't remember the game at all. Can you give me the choices again?
Was it 3-2 to Chelsea? Chelsea win 3-2. Was it 2-1 to Derby County? Or did it go to penalties and Chelsea eventually won at 5-4?
I want to say it went to penalties when we won 5-4.
Dylan, I think do you know the answer? Because I saw a little bit of a grin there. 3-2 is correct. 3-2 is correct. Jackie, it did not go to penalties. Tomori and I believe another Derby County player actually scored an own goal, which put us in the lead. And then I think Pedro at the end got the third one. So that's 1-0 to Dylan. Jackie, I think you need to step it up here.
Step up it up, yeah.
But Dylan, I'll come back to you. Who scored a hat-trick for Chelsea in Lampard's final game as manager? It was January of 2021. It was an FA Cup tie, if you need that hint. Was it Olivier Giroud, Mason Mount, or Tammy Abraham?
Giroud.
It was Tammy Abraham. It was against Luton Town. He scored all three, and we won 3-1. And unfortunately, that was Lampard's final game in charge. So, Jackie, here's your redemption shot. Who did Lampard get his first win against as Chelsea manager? And hint, it was in the Premier League. Was it Leicester City, Wolves, or Norwich City?
We played Man United on opening day and lost 4-0. And so I had a panic attack. And then I forget because we won the next game. I think it was Norwich City.
That is correct. It was Norwich City away, but it wasn't the next game. It was the third game. The next game was Leicester City at home, which we drew 1-1.
Yep.
And the panic grew a little bit more because we were like, we haven't won in 2 games. But that's 1-1. No. Did you say Leicester or Norwich?
Norwich.
Oh, yeah. That was 1-1. I confused myself. All right, Dylan.
Just give me the points.
next question for you. What MLS team did Lampard join in 2015? Was it New York Red Bulls?
NYCFC.
New York City FC is the right answer. And he did have a brief stint with Man City before he joined them because Man City is owned by the same company. But he came to New York and put in a good shift for New York City FC. So, Jackie, that's 2-1. This is your final question. If you win this, we go into a tiebreaker. If you don't, Dylan takes it. In January of 2020, Lampard joined Everton, who we're about to face. He took Joe Edwards as a coach from Chelsea. What other former Chelsea coach player joined Lampard at Everton? Was it Eddie Newton, Claude Makélélé, or Ashley Cole?
Ashley Cole.
That is correct. So it's 2-2. Here's the tiebreaker question. I think you both will get it, but how many goals did Lampard score for Chelsea?
Oof. I don't know the exact number. That's the thing.
232?
It was 211 Premier League goals, which made him the record holder. And that was the answer I was going for. So I will end this as a draw, just like the game ended today. Hopefully this will not be the result at the weekend against Everton. But before we go ahead, Dylan.
I'll let Jackie claim the winner if he can tell me what number Lampard wore at New York City FC.
I honestly can't remember, so I'm just going to go for 17.
He was 18.
Ah, yeah, you won off.
Yeah, won off. We'll keep the draw then, Dylan. I think that's fair.
That was a good one, guys. Good question, Dylan. I'm going to add that for my next one with not Jackie, maybe when Alex is on. But let's talk about Everton. They've hired Rafa Benitez at the start of this season. Did we ever expect that come May of 2022, this season, we'd be talking about them in the relegation zone? Jackie, your thoughts?
It's pretty disappointing to see. And I'm not an Everton fan. Ultimately, it doesn't really matter if they go down or not. But as a footballing fan and knowing the history of one of the few teams, or maybe the only team that's never faced relegation before, it's disappointing to see how far this has gone. And the board maybe reacted late or allowed this to go on for a long time. And honestly, Frank Lampard is the reason I love football, not just Chelsea. He's the reason I love football. And so the fact that he's now back in management, and this is going to be an opportunity where it looks bad on Frank's side, but I really think he came too late to the game to really help them at this point. Ultimately, I hope he survives, but it's not looking good.
It's not. And Dylan, Lampard for the longest time, I think, passed up a few jobs in terms of managerial career, coming into them as a manager. Was Everton at this point, you look back 3 months, the right choice for him?
I think he just needed a job, guys. I think he needed to get somewhere on a CV where he's still working and doing it. Do I think he wants to be there? No. Do I think he could do the job? Maybe. The thing that I love, Frank, he was my first ever jersey that I bought myself. I was gifted other jerseys, but he was the first ever jersey that I saved up my own money for and bought. So I'm never going to say anything disrespectful about the guy, but what I will go ahead and say is maybe Frank's not meant to be a manager. Like, not everybody's cracked up to do this, or maybe he needs to go build his, like, I loved Frank at Derby County. He was doing things. He was the voice of the people. He had the team in his pocket. He had some of his boys from Chelsea.
Right.
I mean, he had all the pieces together to do something. I mean, yeah, no one's going to turn down the offer if Chelsea offers you your dream job. So yeah, he had to take it. I just don't think he was ready. I think if he'd have spent just a couple more years, you know, doing what he's doing, like, for example, I hate using a Liverpool person, for example, but Steven Gerrard, starting in the Scottish League, now building his way up with Aston Villa, I guarantee you that by the time that Jurgen Klopp does eventually leave Liverpool, that job's going to be handed to him and ready, because he's going to be ready for the job. I think Frank is like the boy prince that was given the crown too early. He wasn't ready. His player management wasn't there. And we were seeing that when he became a Chelsea manager, he lost control of the dressing room. He didn't have respect of everybody there. And so the team fell apart and we had to see one of our favorite players get shown the door. Now it was shown the door to somebody who brought us riches that we would have never designed, you know, never seen, but it showed he had a team there if he could have put it together.
Right.
So I appreciate Frank and I love everything that he did for him. And just like Jackie said, he's one of those reasons that we love the game and love Chelsea, but I don't think Frank is maybe up to snuff right now. He maybe could be one day, and I hope we can see that. I'd love to see 10 years from now Frank to have built his record somewhere and get to come back and take over Chelsea and lead us to, you know, maybe our third or fourth Champions League. But I think he's just holding that job and doing what he can right now to get by, and hoping if he can keep them up, then I think he's done wonders, and I hope he does. But the problem is, if you look at who they have left on their record, I mean, on their matches played for the rest of the year, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good for him. We might be the dagger. We might be the dagger this weekend.
Yeah, and I think you're right. You touched on Steven Gerrard, but I look across London at Crystal Palace and Patrick Vieira, who, again, New York City FC a little bit, Nice and France, and now Crystal Palace. He also went away and kind of similar to Gerrard, did things at different leagues, worked out, understood how to manage players and manage situations. In a way, some people may say Chelsea are the one of the reasons why Lampard is in such a situation where he went from Derby County Championship all of a sudden all the way to the top of the Premier League. Didn't work out. We let him go, and now he's kind of on the other side of the Premier League. But like you said, you just can't say no to Chelsea when they knock, and especially with that connection that you have, you just take it. I absolutely think that he hasn't harmed his reputation because he came into a tough situation. If they go down, I think he still gets another couple of chances, but I think you're right. The next job has to be one where he is the one in charge. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of people around him that think they're in charge.
And Everton's building a new stadium and everything right now. Like, I wonder if their focus is even on what's on the field as much as it is the building the field around it. I mean, we don't know. None of us know. It's all speculation of what's going on. But what I do know is his team isn't performing, and it doesn't look like the ownership is actually putting much into the team to give him support. So I'm not going to put it all on him. I think he was handed not necessarily a bad deal because he signed the contract. He knew what he was getting into, but man, I would have loved to seen him. I would have loved to seen him take that Wolves job. I think he could have done some things at Wolves. That would have been cool. I think that was the style that he wanted, that ultra attacking, you know. I don't know. I don't think all the pieces were there. I think there's too many people over. Everton lost, you know, what was it? Lucas Digne left immediately whenever Frank was getting there. I think that was the captain of Everton, right? Am I wrong in saying that?
I think one of them, maybe not the first captain, but vice captain. Yeah.
Either way, he lost a big leader immediately.
Yeah.
They haven't had a proficient goal scorer up top. It just hadn't been getting done. Richarlison's not building up to the hype that was there. And I think he was injured for a bit as well.
Right.
I feel like he kind of walked into a raw deal, but he knew he had to take the job, and he's got to keep going and got to keep trying. I hope that he can keep them up, but if he doesn't, I'd love to see him stay with Everton and bring them back. That will be this. If he can go down and come back up, then he'll have turned himself. He can turn around his own career. Cause right. I don't think anybody's going to fault him if Everton goes down. I don't think anybody's going to do that. But if he can turn him around and bring him back up, he'll have not only won the love of the Everton fans probably forever, but at the same time, like, he'll have put that thing on his resume saying, look what I've done.
Yeah, and I think he's missing that championship promotion, which he honestly should have gotten with Derby County. So it's not a bad shout. Let's just look at their last few results. They lost against Liverpool last weekend. They've drawn against Leicester, which isn't a bad result. They beat Manchester United. And then they lost to Burnley and West Ham. So it's been kind of up and down, but they have picked up some points along the way, which is crucial. Looking at Chelsea's form, a draw against Manchester United, a win against West Ham, loss against Arsenal, win against Southampton, and loss against Brentford. So we've also kind of been a little bit shaky, but we come into this game as favorites. And even though I say that, Everton have won each of their last three Premier League home games against Chelsea. Last winning four consecutively against us was back in 1970 to 1973. So we go a long way back for them to kind of break this record that's standing. But Jackie, we've seen, and usually you and I base our predictions on some of these records, is when these records are in place, especially against Chelsea, we don't tend to break them, but this might be an opportunity to do that. So let's touch on some of the key starting players. Would you continue with Mendy in goal, Jackie?
Yeah, I think you're going to have to stick with Mendy. There's no reason to drop him at this point. I do agree with Dylan. He's not been up to snuff in the last few games, but he's not been faltering to the level where he deserves to be dropped at this point. So absolutely, I'd stick with Mendy.
All right, so Mendy in goal. Dylan, do you bring in Trevor Chalobah in for this game, especially at that right center back position? Because we know Gordon for Everton has a lot of pace. We saw him terrorize Trent Alexander-Arnold last weekend. So just to kind of counteract that, do we bring Chalobah in as one of the three center backs?
Absolutely. I don't want Christensen to touch the field again for the rest of the year. He didn't want to play for us. There's been more speculation about him, and we already know he's going to Barcelona. Yeah, we also know this for Rudiger, but we saw this coming. None of us saw this coming with Christensen. Christensen was an academy boy. Like, he's been with us for the longest time. Like, it just makes me it just shows me that he's greedy and he doesn't believe in the project. So yes, bring Chalobah in. He wants to be there. He wants to play. He's had his, you know, ups and downs, but remember that first goal that Chalobah scored, dropped to his knees, crying, just like loving life, doing it for his mom. Like, I don't know. Just like when I see players like Chalobah on the field, it gives me hope for the future. And yes, I think Chalobah definitely needs to be on the field. No question in my mind. If I never see Christensen with a blue jersey on again, I'm fine. I'm fine with it.
I agree with you, and I've had some critical things to say about Christensen. But so Chalobah at that right center back, Jackie Silva and Rudiger, kind of mainstays. They seem
to pick themselves. Yep. Yeah, pretty normal there.
Dylan, we'd go with Reese and your favorite player, Alonso, on the other side.
Now, I don't hate on Alonso. I would. So, once again, Alonso, I'm not too sure that. So, once again, this goes back to rotation. If Malang Sarr is fit, I'd like to see how he could fit into the equation, maybe instead of Alonso this time. If we're going to have Rudiger right there, maybe we play that back three situation and maybe let Rudiger be the backup for Malang Sarr, and let's see what he can do. He's shown what he can do defensively. Let's see what he can do going forward just a little bit. He makes good decisions on the ball for the most part, but sometimes gets caught out of position. So maybe this is the game where we give Alonso a break and we give Sarr a chance. If we can't give Sarr a chance against Everton, then who are we going to give a chance against? That's it. So yeah, let's give Alonso a break. Thank you for what you did today. I appreciate you. I'll applaud you. That was an amazing shot. Let's have you a break and maybe come on. I would just wish Uncle Tommy would make those subs a little bit sooner in the game, because he's been way late on doing that lately. Like, putting people in the 75th minute isn't enough time to get adjusted and make an impact. So let's give Alonso a break. Let's give Alonso a break.
So Malang Sarr at the left wing back position, Jackie midfield. I think Conte went off with maybe a niggle today, and with the FA Cup final coming, you don't want to risk that. So if he is actually injured, you just go with Jorginho and Loftus-Cheek.
Yeah, and if he's not injured, I think it'd be good to go with Jorginho and Loftus-Cheek. I think we have praised Loftus-Cheek quite a bit in the last few episodes because he's done a utility man job. And I think regardless of what Tuchel's asking him to do, whether it's play defensive midfield or charge forward and do the attacking piece that Conte does, I think he can do it both. And he's shown us that. So I'd definitely give him the opportunity.
Okay, that's fair. Dylan, front three, and this is where I want to pick both of your brains is, we just spoke about rotation, and I think Kai and Timo and Mason have started maybe the last three, four games. Do we see a switch here? And I know Lukaku came in for the Arsenal game, didn't really do much, and eventually we did have to bring Kai Havertz back in. Do we see a switch here? Maybe a Pulisic comes in, maybe a Lukaku does actually start, or even a Hakim Ziyech for one of those three positions?
I think Mason's going to get the minutes no matter what. I think Mason... He does too much for us. He controls too much of the game. I think Mason gets to start. If we're not putting our trust in Lukaku, then it's obviously going to be Kai. I think Timo has played so good for us. Let's respect him, give him a tiny little bit of a break, and let's get that wizard back out. Let's get Hakim on there, and let's see what he can do for us. He sends in balls. The only person that sends in balls like Hakim on our team is Reece James, but Reece James is going to need to be a little bit further back on the field because, God, I love it. Give me a clean sheet. Just give me a clean sheet. Give me just like, I will sacrifice Reece going forward so much if we can win a game with a clean sheet. Just Just give me a clean sheet.
Especially against, especially against Everton, who tend to be leaky and don't score too much. So I think you're right. If we are up and we need to defend it, we could certainly do that. I don't want to speak too soon, but Jackie, what do you think about the front three? Do we go with Kai, Mason, and Ziyech like Dylan suggested?
Yeah, look, it's a strong shout. And for me, I think Timo Werner probably needs to sit back on the bench for one particular game. Again, full respect to him. He plays his soul and his heart out. And that, I think that's why Chelsea fans love him, because he may not always score, but he always gives his 110%. I'd like to give a shout out to Pulisic, because I think in this particular game, he can be a little more direct. I mean, Hakim Ziyech does that deep passing. He gives me the Cesc Fabregas vibe sometimes with those long passes. But Christian Pulisic could be a little direct when I feel like Everton might be tight and closed in, that he might find a way to wiggle through. So maybe Christian Pulisic, but again, we need to rotate a couple of the guys out there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So let's get to score predictions. Jackie, are we putting that dagger in there with Frank Lampard?
It pains me to say so, but I think we're worried about Frank Lampard. We've got to worry about ourselves as well. We want to secure that third position, and everything after that, then I'm going to support Frank. But this particular game, I want a 2-0, and we need to get back to winning ways.
All right, 2-0. Dylan, are we turning into Charity FC again on Sunday, or are we turning into the Southampton team that just went out and scored 6? Or somewhere in between? 3-0?
I'm going 3-0. Possibly 3-1, just because we just like to let up a goal. You know, it's just kind of our thing. Like you mentioned it, Charity FC. We just want to give them hope. And you know what the funniest thing is? If we did let up a goal, they would score first, and then we'd come back with anger. But realistically, I think we're going to be pissed off, because the way we played today, even though it was against the light Man United team, we played with such directness, with such purpose with the ball. We were moving it around quickly. You know, we had double the accurate passes that Man United had today. Double. So we know what we're doing on the ball. We were in the box. We were camping out in their box today. So yeah, I think on Sunday we're gonna see a pissed off Uncle Tommy, and he's going to tell people, you're either going to score the goals or you're going to get off the dang field. Like, that's just the way it's going to be. And so I think, you know what? I'm going to go back on my lineup. I think Kai's going to get a break. And I think, just like Jackie said, I think Pulisic is going to get that moment to shine.
Yeah.
I think it is. I think Mason's going to stay on. And I think it's going to be maybe like a Christian, like kind of playing like a false nine situation, kind of going in and floating underneath, and you know that's it. Yep. So up top, let's put Christian and Pulisic, Hakim Ziyech and Mason Mount in that different little bit of diamond situation, because I think he can do it. If Christian can't score against Everton, well, then you know. but once again, back on the Christian situation, like I've been hearing so much rumbling talks that Timo might want to go because he's not grounded and maybe not happy. We don't hear that about a Christian. Christian wants to be there and wants to play. So anytime he's been coming on the field lately, he's been doing something magic. So let's get Christian on the field. Let's see it. Captain America, man. Let's
there you go.
Yeah, I agree. And I love how Dylan's like, if we can't score against Everton. But
it is what it is, man. Like, we got to score goals. If we're not going to do it against a team that's in a relegation battle that can't stand on their own 2 feet, then what are we watching Chelsea for, man? Yeah. Like, come on. Let's get it together, guys. Like,
yeah, I get it together is right. And I think with the week coming off, especially now that we don't have a fixture pile up or we don't have Champions League to play, we have a week off between Everton and Wolves, which is the following weekend. So I think Uncle Tommy, like you guys say, can say, put in a great performance and you get the next 2-3 days off. Go relax, take it off. But if you don't, we're coming back into the training the next day. And that should be motivation enough to get the job done. So for me, I am going to go for a 1-0.
come on, Rahul.
That's such you built us up to bring us down.
That's a soft guess. Is that what you really think? You only think one? Come on.
See, I rather lower my expectations and then be pleasantly surprised than say 4-0.
Sad way to go through being a Chelsea fan.
That's what Chelsea has done to me over the last month or so.
I mean, I guess I like to get my hopes up just a little bit.
Hey, if we win 3-0, I'll be the happiest person. But As long as we get the win and get 3 points, that's all. Well, that matters.
If we win 3-0 like I predicted, the first beer at Blues Day is on you.
There you all go. Right. Agreed. You heard it, guys. The first beer is on me if we win 3-0. If we win 1-0, the first beer is on Dylan. Fair. And anything in between is all on Jackie. But that brings us to the end of the episode, Dylan. It's been a fun conversation. I think we've enjoyed it. We've enjoyed the back and forth on the Alonso piece, on just some of the other things that are going on in and around the club. Before we wrap it up, any parting thoughts from yourself?
I just want to thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate the conversation, appreciate the dialogue, appreciate the passion that you guys are bringing to the game, appreciate the awareness that we're bringing to our club and everything that's going on, not only just in the men's side of the game, but also in the women's, because they need some love as well. And thank you for highlighting my little piece of Chelsea down on the bayou. For anybody, and I'm just a little shout out to my group. For anybody interested in seeing what's going on down in Louisiana, please check out on Instagram, Carefree Louisiana, at Carefree Louisiana. We've got 12,000 followers. We've got some funny, witty memes going on, and a great group of guys that have a good party. And we're hosting a Blues Day event. Our second annual one's going to be going on in February, and we'd love to have anybody and everybody from across the country and the globe who is a Chelsea fan that wants to root it on with like-minded people. And down on the bayou, come on and come see us.
Absolutely. And it's not just down in the bayou, but I've seen Ben over in London this past weekend. So the Carefree Louisiana family is spreading.
Absolutely. We're a group of diehard fans that are doing nothing but rooting on our boys, both, on land and overseas, so we're ready and rowdy. So come down South Louisiana and see us sometime, guys, because I would love to have you.
We'll definitely be there. Jackie, any parting thoughts from yourself?
I think Dylan did a good job. I will say this. We started this podcast to talk about Chelsea, but also to meet people like you, Dylan. I think it's been an absolute honor and pleasure to get to know you and learn about what you're doing with Carefree Louisiana. And conversation like this is always fun, always important. And what we share is always that love for Chelsea. And we'll continue to share that love for Chelsea, even if it's 3-0 against Everton or 2-0 or 1-0. So we'll see how that plays out.
Absolutely. And you're welcome back any point, you, Roy. Ben, maybe next time as well, we could have all of you and we could definitely.
You don't want us all at the same time. you can't have that many Louisiana people on the mic. You guys don't get to talk.
Maybe we'll. You know what? At the next Blues Day event, we'll plan to do a live podcast with you guys.
There you go.
Well, you better do it before the game.
Oh yeah. That's awesome. But that wraps it up, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Please continue to subscribe, like, and follow us at the Premier Chels on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Instagram. And on Twitter, it's at Premier Chels. And like Dylan said, definitely check out Carefree Louisiana on Instagram. And as always, send us your feedback, but we will be back with a new episode. But until then, stay safe and up the Chels.
Hey, guys. The Premier Chels is sponsored by Kickoff Coffee. They are a top quality artisanal roasted coffee. In other words, they're Champions League winner and Premier League winner every single time. They deliver fresh bags directly to your home, so you don't have to go to a coffee shop and pick up something. And the best part about them is every bag gives back to soccer charities. 10% of the proceeds go to organizations that use soccer to promote youth social development in the underserved areas. Use our code TPCOFFEE15 to get 15% off your order. You can order at kickoffcoffeeco.com or check out the links on our social media. Thanks.